There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
I'll be going to the University of Oklahoma.
Whereas this jacket still fits me 10 years later. How about that?
I'd take my talents to Penn State.
University of Florida.
For the University of Florida.
University of Florida. Go Gators.
I'll be taking my talents to the University of Oregon.
The Ohio State.
Where you going to school, little bro?
What's up?
I had to go ahead and get the shoes to match it.
I would like to pronounce my commitment to Louisiana State
University. University of Georgia.
I'll be attending University of Alabama.
Some new faces to some familiar places. As you see, the early signing period underway. It runs through Friday. What a start we got off to on Wednesday. Alabama with 21 ESPN 300 recruits. That ties their own record for number of ESPN 300 recruits that they set back in 2017, followed by Georgia, Texas A&M, Michigan, and Oregon to round out the top. Welcome into College Football Live. Matt Schick along with National Recruiting Director Tom Lugabill and former five-star himself.
Right? Depending on how you count to five.
Trevor Badge out of BYU. Hey, let's talk winners from the early signing period. First off, we may as well call it just the National Signing Day because
right.
More than three-fourths of the ESPN 300 are all signed and accounted for. Big winners here on Wednesday.
Well, the big names surfaced. Alabama, Ohio State, Michigan, you know, so on and so forth. But I got to be honest with you, Trevor, it was the Florida Gators for me. Coming into the day, they needed to make some inroads in the state of Florida. Did not have a player ranked in their class in the top 100 of the ESPN 350. End up reestablishing that pipeline into Lakeland High School with Davie Hammond, the offensive lineman. Of course, Keon Zipper, the number one ranked tight end. And then certainly Lloyd Summerall on the defensive side of the ball. So I felt Dan Mullen and the Florida Gators closed strong, closed fast, and accomplished exactly what they hoped to.
See, for me it was Oregon at number 5. The next one of the Pac-12 is Washington at 18.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is that conference has been so up for grabs in recent years that it won't take that many star impact players to be able to tip the balance. And right now Oregon is the one that's pulling them in. I think Mario Cristobal has done a phenomenal job of having that locker room in his corner. That's one of the big things about Oregon is that when Willie Taggart left for Florida State, the players in that locker room lobbied hard to have Cristobal promoted from within to be their head coach. And so much of recruiting is the players in that locker room. When the coaches aren't around, they'll tell the truth and they'll say why they wanted this coach. And that, I think, resonates with recruits.
Kayvon Thibodeau, it started with Kayvon Thibodeau, the number one overall prospect in the ESPN 300, the first time in the ESPN 300 era, the number one player has signed with Oregon as they're putting together a top five class. Let's go back and start at the top here, Tom, with Alabama. This was a school that had seven consecutive top two classes,
sure.
And then last year tumbled all the way down to number 6. None of that was because of numbers, but here back up at number 1, a couple of guys announcing on our air earlier on Wednesday, Trey Sanders
sure.
Announcing the running back out of IMG Academy, Evan Neal, the big offensive tackle. What has Nick Saban done with this class?
Well, for starters, he's tied his record for most ESPN 300 prospects in one class at 21 at the end of the opening day of the early signing period. But I think it's the areas that he addressed across the board. This was a younger, more inexperienced team on the perimeter on defense at corner. They go out and they fulfill some needs in the defensive secondary with the likes of Jeffrey Carter. In the offensive line, Evan Neal to close the day was a massive get when you look at the true freshmen that have made an impact or the younger players that have made an impact for Alabama over the course of the years in the offensive line. I see a bright future for Evan Neal there. And then Trey Sanders, you're going to lose some bodies, most notably Damian Harris, So you've got to be able to replenish the backfield. We know it's going to be running back by committee. He's another great player that fits into the mold of what their offense is.
I think what gets lost in the great recruiting classes that Nick Saban brings in is how well they develop these guys. Mm-hmm. Because it's one thing to bring in a whole bunch of 18 and 19-year-old superstar divas who think that they are God's gift to the world and then turn them into not just good college football players, but team players, to subordinate those egos to the team and to stay relatively trouble-free off the field. These are things that I think a lot of coaches would love to do. You see a lot of recruits that come in, highly ranked recruits that never develop.
Right.
And part of the reason is that they don't accept coaching. Part of the reason is that their ego is too big. And part of the reason is that they don't embrace the personal growth program. Saban is able to bring in guys that want to embrace all those things and then actually do it.
Yeah.
And that gets lost in the fact that all these dazzling stars are up on top of these recruiting rankings.
Do want to mention this could be, if they finish this way, their sixth number one class in the last 8 years. Also want to mention as a big winner is Michigan and Jim Harbaugh.
Mm-hmm.
Within the last week, Daxton Hill, number one safety, had flipped from Michigan to Alabama. Then on early signing day morning, Daxton Hill flips back from Alabama to Michigan, putting together a top five class there. What about coaches and programs that have some work still to do?
Well, certainly, I think you've got to look to the Pac-12, as you referenced, with Oregon sitting there at the top five. You got Washington inside the top 20 at the back end of it at 18, Trevor. But where is UCLA? Where is USC in the hierarchy of this conference top to bottom? Because it's clear that, you know, ASU made strides under Herm Edwards in his first full calendar year. We've seen what Chris Peterson has meant to this conference. Washington State, great season on the field. But today was a day absent of impact verbal announcements and signings by UCLA and USC. And how does that reflect on the conference?
How about this? Boise State has more ESPN 300 prospects signed from the state of California than UCLA. It's amazing.
Yeah, that is amazing. But I would ask you this, Tom, because it seems like if you know where you want to go, you go.
Right.
You know, one of the reasons that they're the top three classes right now are SEC,
mm-hmm.
right? You've got Alabama, Georgia, Texas A&M, and then LSU was sitting there at six.
You're right.
So you've got, in the top six, three in the same division, for goodness sake. But they knew where they wanted to go. They signed there. Bam. It seems to me that as a recruit, if I'm not sure and I want to wait, it's because maybe I'm looking for a better deal mm-hmm. than some of the offers that I've gotten. And what does that say about the Pac-12 teams that don't have a lot of guys signed in this early period?
Yeah, as it relates to other competitors coming in and having interest in those kids, having interest in some of those other programs. And it's a poor reflection on the conference right now, because to me, it used to be in the Pac-12, there was SC and everybody else. There was a great player out there, and SC wanted them. SC was going to get them. That gap's been closed now. I don't think that exists anymore. There is a process going on at UCLA. I don't know what the end game's going to be. I know it's by design. I know Chip Kelly wanted to slow play this. I don't know if in our climate right now, Trevor, you can slow play recruiting and keep up with everybody else. I know you don't want to miss on evaluations, but the Bruins are way behind the eight ball. And if there are kids that aren't jumping on board, if a Kayvon Thibodeau is in Southern California and he's not having USC and UCLA as a finalist on his list, that's shocking to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's got to change for the Pac-12.
Yeah, six of the top 22 prospects in the state of California signed
with Oregon. Yeah.
Yeah, so we'll see. USC's best recruit might be Cliff Kingsbury, their offensive coordinator. We'll see.
And it used to be that they'd go from there to Oregon because of the cool uniforms
and
the great facilities. Well, now there's cool uniforms in a lot of places.
Everywhere. Yeah.
Fantastic facilities everywhere. UCLA just opened up a brand new state-of-the-art facility right on their practice field. I mean, it's very cool. And so Oregon doesn't have that leader anymore, and yet the recruits are going.
There's more substance.
Yeah. Other programs that have some work to do. Miami lost a lot of commitments
Florida
from the
State.
Start of December, and Florida State had some flips
a
away
rough day.
From Florida State.
Yeah.
And speaking of Florida State, again, some coaches that are going to be entering their second year in those respective programs. You got Jimbo Fisher, Mario Cristobal, Joe Moorhead, Willie Taggart. Again, you can see their class rankings. Pruitt, Mullen, Chad Morris, Scott Frost putting together a top 25 class after his first season as head coach. Tom, who's set up for a lot of success going into their second season as head coach?
Oh, I believe without question it's Jimbo Fisher at Texas A&M. Not only with the on-field success, but the resources that Texas A&M has as a program, the attention to detail, the evaluation process, the knowledge of what it's going to take to compete with an Alabama, an LSU, an Auburn out of the West, and the ability, I think, to compete on a national scale for the best defensive personnel in the front seven, which is what Texas A&M is going to have if they want to compete long-term and get to Atlanta. They are set up from an infrastructure, from a coaching stability standpoint, from a resources standpoint, and I think, Trevor, a current roster foundation for long-term success as Jimbo heads into his second year.
You know, what's interesting, though, is that you talk about the resources, the facilities, the commitment from the university. All those things, they've had there for a long, long time.
I know.
Yeah. And what have they won since we've been born?
Right.
Seriously. Right. I mean, Johnny Manziel, we think about that. He won the Heisman Trophy as a freshman, but they didn't win their division that year.
Right.
And so they've had that commitment. And I think this is where it comes down to. It's not just your zip code. Yeah. It's who the man is leading that program.
Correct.
If you look at Florida, Dan Mullen signed three guys from Lakeland, Florida on the same minute, literally within just a few minutes of each other. And he's got a class that I think is turning in to be better in the closing in the early signing day than it looked coming into this day. But the thing is, until Steve Spurrier, Florida had not won a single clean conference championship in football ever.
Yeah.
Ever in the history of that program. You know, they had one under NCAA sanction, but not a clean one. And Spurrier came in, won the SEC, won the national championship, left. They dipped down again. In comes Urban Meyer, won the SEC, won a couple national championships. He left. They dipped down again. Even though the zip code of the University of Florida stayed the same.
Sure.
The recruiting base stayed the same.
It's the leadership.
And so that's right. It's the leadership. And so Florida now, I think, is really rising when it comes to the commitment from the university to that program compared to what it's been for a little bit. Texas A&M has always been up high. But now A&M, when I went out there to visit in the offseason, the word they used most often to describe the feeling around that program with Jimbo Fisher is excitement. There's so much excitement. And the other word is momentum. Mm-hmm. And I think that if he's able to do what he did at Florida State, then all those things will come together for the Aggies for the first time in a long time.
Yeah, Jimbo Fisher had five top three classes as the head coach at Florida State. Probably going to get a top three class when it's all said and done. All the hay is in the barn in the late signing period coming up in February. Tom Van Haren, we're going to add another chair here, and he will join us as we look ahead and look back at the early signing period. Looking ahead, Saturday, December 29th, it's the national semifinals again. The road to the college football playoff begins with recruiting. Bama, Oklahoma, Notre Dame, and Clemson cobbling together top 10, top 12 classes. They've been terrific here through this early signing period. Speaking of Alabama, we've got an update on his health. Tua, pretty confident he'll be ready to go. In fact, 100% as soon as next week. We'll have that update next.
College Football Live is brought to you by Outback Steakhouse, where you can go big and go home with delivery and takeout.
Early signing period by the numbers. Look at 2017 versus 2018. More than 70% of the players of the 2018 class were signed last season. And you look at this year, it's more than two-thirds of the 2019 class in terms of the ESPN 300 signees already signed, sealed, and delivered. Tom Van Haren joining us yet again. It was a big change for everybody, especially the coaches, going to that early signing period. How have you seen their approach or attitude about it change from year one to year two?
Yeah, well, last year when I spoke to coaches, a lot of them, they still had questions going into the early signing period. What's going to happen? Are kids going to sign like they say they are? So this year, this time around, those questions had all been answered for them, and they knew the numbers that we knew, that two-thirds of the class signed. A lot of the prospects are committing and signing in this early signing period. So a lot of the coaches that I talked to said they're treating this as really the only signing day. If you're committed right now, we expect you to sign, or else we don't really think that you're committed in this class. So I think that mentality of having leverage and having the confidence to say, we need you to sign now, I don't think that was there last year.
Well, and with that being said, and you referenced leverage, the player, depending upon the position that they play, may still maintain more leverage over the program if they're at a premium position, say right. defensive end, corner, quarterback, offensive tackle, offensive line. So that player maybe sits back and says, no, I'm not quite sure yet. I'm going to wait till January, where the pressure is not going to be as firm on that player because he's so highly coveted. Whereas if a receiver tries to pull that off, they may say, all right, see you later. We're replacing you.
And the other difference with this early signing period that coaches have found, too, is January is way more relaxed for them. That was the other reaction that I got was last year there was a lot of moaning, there was some groaning about December, you know, that grind after the season and trying to sign prospects in this class. But then once we get to January, now a lot of coaches are saying they're actually using this to get ahead in the 2020 class.
And 21.
Right.
And 22.
Right, yeah.
But
so,
I think that, oh, I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, so they're going to get ahead now because most of their prospects are already committed and signed. So now they're going to use January and get ahead.
There's a flip side to leverage, too, though. Because we think about the high-end prospects, mm-hmm. right? They want to sign. They want to get locked in. Well, what if you're somebody's plan B?
Yeah.
What if you're not the one they really want, but they're not sure if a rival is going to steal away the recruit they really want? So they're just keeping you on the line.
Sure.
And if you say, hey, I want to sign right now, and they're a little tepid to that,
well,
you know you're their plan B, and that might tell you that you need to either sign with somebody else right now or hold off and not sign in the early period.
Or, Tom, right. a guy who's right at the top of a board of a group of five team but might be a backup plan at a Power 5 school, does he decide, okay, that gets into maybe disadvantages, if there is any, for players to wait to that late signing period in February?
Well, that just furthers the scenario that Trevor outlined in the sense that if that player is being told, hey, listen, wait up, we may have a spot for you. I can't guarantee it, but we may have a spot for you. Now all the risk falls into the lap of the prospect. He can take his bird in the hand, all right, or potentially wait for something that may never come. So there's risk in that, and you've got to decide what's best for you and what you're willing to risk as a prospect.
That makes my skin crawl right there.
Right.
I mean, go back to high school.
Yeah.
Prom. You say to a girl, hang on, I might ask you to the prom. I'm not sure yet, but I just might, right? That is an insult, right? Now, it's not necessarily an insult here with recruiting because it's a different animal.
Yeah.
But at the same time, and I don't want to disparage programs for having plan B. You have to have that. But, boy, if I'm a player, I want to go where I'm wanted.
Wanted, yeah.
I don't want to go where they'd have me if there's nothing else.
Sure.
I want to go where they want me.
On the flip side of this conversation, too, though, sometimes some of these underrated prospects are getting more opportunity because now everybody is signed. And if a class, you know, if Georgia misses out on their safety prospect and mm-hmm. they're still looking for a safety, there might be a 3-star guy that would have signed with a lower program. But now maybe a bigger program is going to come after him, give him a different opportunity as well to try to get into a different situation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and he better have faith in himself because it might give him an opportunity to sit on the bench for a lot longer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
or
exactly right.
He thinks he's underrated
right.
and he believes in himself.
Yeah.
It's a risk either way.
Think about what the early signing period has done as well with the new coaching hires. And we talked about it last year, and Mac Brown was on our signing day special today, not as an analyst.
Scrambling.
But as a coach, he's just said, look, the early signing period has changed the game when it comes to new coaches being hired. You're really up against, and that's why you see coaches first signing class to second signing class make those huge jumps when you have that full year instead of just a couple of weeks like Mac Brown. A lot of those coaches have had. Let's take a look at our Progressive Bowl Challenge Cup. UAB's win in the Cherubundi Boca Raton Bowl gave Conference USA its first win this bowl season, while the Mac is 0-2. The Northern Illinois loss. Ohio's going to try and get rid of that Mac goose egg in tonight's DXL Frisco Bowl against San Diego State. Got some breaking news to get to. Khalil Tate thought, what, might he join the transfer market? No, he's returning to Arizona for his senior season. He was 8th in the Pac-12 in passing yards, 4th in the Pac-12 in touchdown passes. We'll get more into that and the transfers coming up. But first, as I mentioned, the DXL Frisco Bowl, San Diego State and Ohio, 8 o'clock Eastern time tonight on ESPN, also on the ESPN app, so you can watch it anywhere.
College Football Live is brought to you by Allstate, reminding you that football season is mayhem.
Time now for 3 and out. Tua Tagovailoa says he's getting healthy.
I feel great. You know, we're still in the process of trying to fully recover. Everything's been going good up to this point, I believe, but, you know, we're just going to continue to take it a day at a time with treatment, with rehab. You know, I think I should be able to be 100% hopefully by next week, Monday.
Just riding a scooter. He had surgery. You believe he's going to be 100% next week?
No, I think the Ten Commandments frown on lying. I don't think the NCAA has any penalties. I've had a high ankle sprain, and every guy's different, but those are easily set back if you step on somebody's foot. So I'll believe it when I see it.
I think he will be 100% ready to go based off of the rehab schedule, the doctors, the athletic training staff. It will be if it gets re-injured that you need to be more worried about.
All right, that's in the national semifinal. A slightly lesser game, but just as important to the guys. DXL Frisco Bowl. It's Ohio and San Diego State tonight. Who you got?
Ooh, Nathan Rourke and that group at Ohio, so well coached, but they're going to be outskilled in this matchup. I don't like the athletic matchup. I go with San Diego State.
Their season's kind of...
I know, they suffered some injuries. But I'm going to stick with the Aztecs on this.
Yeah, normally, see, this is a stout Aztec defense against a really good offense for Ohio. But I think I've got to go with Ohio here.
Really?
Yeah, I do, just because I just do.
You worried about San Diego State's injuries? A little bit.
Maybe. Let's get to a heartwarming story from National Signing Day.
I brought Kingsley out here today because he's inspired me a lot through the torn ACL process. He taught me that the only disability is a bad attitude, and if he can come around every day with this big old smile on, I can do it just the same. So without further ado, I told Kingsley I'd announce it to him before I told anyone else. So I'm going to tell him, and then I'll let him announce to y'all.
Ain't going this there, Kingsley.
That's awesome. Cooper Dawson out of South Carolina commits to Syracuse. Love has it. His buddy Kingsley Feinman make the announcement. He's got cerebral palsy. Awesome. Great job there. Congrats to all the commits.